Please be seated. Good morning. We're delighted to welcome for our second case this morning, Oconomowoc High School students. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming this morning. Please be seated. The students are here with us with a program called Court with Class. Students from around the state are invited to join us for an oral argument. They are supplied the briefs and other materials about the case and may have done some other activities relating to the case we're about to hear. And this is a national award-winning program that we're delighted to have you all join with us today. In addition to the oral argument, the students meet with a justice of this court, and today that justice is Justice Rogensack, who is seated on my far right. Let me introduce the other members of the court. Seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her left, Justice David Prosser, and on the far left, Justice Lewis Butler. With those introductions completed, we'll call our first case. Before I do that, there is a summary of the issues and facts of this case available if you do not have one. So if you just raise your hand, the marshal will give you one. Thank you, Ms. Nodoff. 03AP2668, All Star Rent-A-Car, Inc. versus Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Arguing on behalf of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is Assistant Attorney General Creeran. Counsel?
May it please the Court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Thomas Creeran, and I represent the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and the Division of Hearings and Appeals. This case began in 2002 when DOT began proceedings to revoke All-Star Rent-A-Car's dealer license. All-Star is a used car dealership, and it needs a license in order to sell cars. Shortly after DOT began revocation proceedings, All-Star also requested that DOT renew All-Star's license, which was about to expire. DOT denied that request. All-Star then contested DOT's initial determinations revoking and refusing to renew All-Star's dealer license by appealing them to DHA, where they were heard together in one proceeding.
When it goes to the circuit court on review, what decision does the circuit court review? Does it review DHA's decision or the original Department of Transportation decision? And does the Department of Transportation have a written decision with an explanation?
No, it...
Which one are you answering first, the second question, about the DOT's explanation or lack thereof?
The decision that is reviewed is the decision of the Division of Hearings and Appeals.
All right. Does the Department of Transportation, in its decision, does it have a written decision with reasoning?
It issues a written notification to the dealer explaining why its license is being revoked or non-renewed. But that decision contains no findings of fact, conclusions of law.
DHA has a hearing?
DHA has a hearing at DHA's offices.
And evidence is presented?
Correct.
Okay. And the two parties then would be All-Star Rent-A-Car and the Department of Transportation. Okay, got
Correct.
It.
Does a reviewing court owe any deference to the Department of Transportation's decision?
No, there's a decision by the Court of Appeals, DOT versus Commissioner of Transportation, that The Commissioner of Transportation was the predecessor agency to DHA in these kind of cases, and that case holds that the deference is owed to the Commissioner of Transportation and that DOT gets no deference.
And it would be hard to give a deference if it had no explanation.
And no findings of fact and no conclusions of law.
Does the DOT have an official formal hearing, or is it just...
No.
Okay, got it. So we're really reviewing DHA. Got it.
Okay. The administrative decision that was issued after DHA's examiner conducted the hearing found that All-Star did not tell a buyer that a vehicle had been in an accident, found that, according to one mechanic, the vehicle's frame was bent like an accordion, found that the vehicle's condition was not revealed to the buyers, and that when the buyers discovered the damage and requested that All-Star buy back the car, All-Star made an offer that the buyers did not find to be acceptable. The DHA decision also found that All-Star did not provide records requested by a TOT investigator, even though All-Star knew that it was obligated to do so when a DOT investigator appeared on the premises. Based upon these findings, DHA's hearing examiner issued a proposed decision upholding DOT's initial license revocation and license non-renewal determinations. The administrator of DHA then issued a final decision affirming DHA's hearing examiner. As required by Section 227.48, Parent 2 of the statutes, the administrator of DHA attached a notice to his decision stating that any petition for judicial review shall name the Division of Hearings and Appeals as respondent. All-Star did then petition for judicial review, but it did not follow the instructions in DHA's notice. Instead of naming DHA as respondent, All-Star's petition for judicial review named DOT as respondent.
Counselor, what if the notice that you had attached, instead of saying naming DHA, had some kind of a typo, and it said some other agency that maybe has three letters, okay, just as a hypothetical. Would you still be arguing that their notice of appeal was insufficient in those circumstances?
I think that would get to the second issue in this case, which is whether All-Star's conduct was reasonable under the circumstances. I mean, for instance, if they had issued a notice saying, name the personnel commission.
Yeah, just something else. That's right.
But, that does trigger the provisions of 227.48.1, which says that the time doesn't run, you know, if you don't identify the proper agency. Now, the Court of Appeals has issued a decision in Habermill saying you still only have 6 months. But our position would be that you'd still look at whether their conduct was reasonable under the circumstances, and that, you know, maybe it is reasonable if they then go out and serve the personnel commission if we give them a notice that says name the personnel commission. But that's not what happened in this case. We gave them a notice that said name the Division of Hearings and Appeals, and they did not follow that notice.
Counsel, isn't the issue – I'm sorry, you finished with Justice Rogenczak's question.
I think so.
Okay. Isn't the issue not whether or not DHA was named, but who was served here? Is that the issue?
Well, the decision-making agency has to be named and served within 30 days. Neither of those were done, so both of those are an issue.
If DHA had been served, but the caption remains DOT, you know, as the case initially was filed at the DOT, is there any impediment in that regard?
Well, I would say probably. If you look at the Court of Appeals underlying Sunnyview decision, in Chapter 227, the parties go agency by agency. So, DHA is the decision-making agency that has to be named. Now, there are some other cases, you get to the question whether it's a technical defect or not.
Okay, before you proceed, I mean, that's one of the essence of the Court of Appeals opinion, just what you said, that DHA is an agency. The Court of Appeals says in paragraphs 11 and 12 of its opinion, I think 11, it says, hey, that's one of the problems, because if you looked at 227 and the definition of agency, DHA isn't a definition, isn't an agency within that definition. How do you respond to that?
Well, our position is that there's later enacted more specific language in Chapter 218 and in Section 227.46.2M that makes DHA the decision-making agency. And I mean, even if the Court of Appeals is correct that there's somehow a conflict between that later enacted more specific language and the earlier more general language that in 227.01, if you look at 218.011, that defines division of hearings and appeals as the division of hearings and appeals in the Department of Administration. And if you look at 227.431, that picks up the same language, referring to the administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals in the Department of Administration. Then you go to 227.46.2M, and it says the decision of the administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals, which has to mean, given those other statutes, the decision of the Division of Hearings and Appeals in the Department of Administration, that decision is a final decision of the agency subject to judicial review.
Counsel, it says the Department of Transportation may petition for judicial review. So the Department of Transportation is a party in interest.
Yes.
And I want to just go back to the initial question of Justice Bradley. Assuming you named in judicial review in circuit court DHA and served DHA, wouldn't the All-Star also have to serve the Department of Transportation because it's a party? Otherwise, the DOT is cut out, and you represent both here.
Yes, but they did serve DOT and name DOT within 30 days.
Suppose they didn't. What would happen then? Suppose they name DHA just like they're supposed to, and they serve DHA like they're supposed to, and don't name.
Well, there are provisions in Chapter 227 that says that you must serve the parties that are identified in the agency's decision.
Do you know that section number? Not, I'll find it. Don't worry about it. Go ahead.
I don't have it offhand.
So, serving DOT.
You have an additional 30 days after serving the decision-making agency to serve the parties that appeared before that decision-making agency.
Under any conditions, DOT had to be served within a particular time period, whether it was 30 or 60. Okay.
Yes.
They got that right.
That was right.
So the complaint here is that they didn't serve DHA.
The decision-making agency, yes.
Yeah, well, isn't the complaint that under 227.48.2, which says that the time allowed for filing each petition and identification of the party be named as respondent. I think your opposing counsel says, look, you didn't name a party to be named as respondent. In other words, you named All-Star, you named DOT, but you didn't name DHA. That's the position that they're taking.
Well, you have two different sections in Chapter 227. You have 227.47.1, which requires the decision-making agency to identify in its decision the parties that appeared before it. Okay? And you have 227.48.1, which requires the decision-making agency to identify the agency that should be named as respondent. And I think they're confusing the two separate statutes. 227.47.1 refers to parties that appeared before the agency, and if you distill the argument to its essence, what it would mean is that the decision-making agency can only be a party that appeared before the agency, and that can't possibly be the case.
Well, it would be where they'd name themselves. I'm talking about eventually that they'd be their own they'd have to, for a review, they'd be naming themselves as one of the party, as the respondent.
Well, I've seen a lot of Chapter 227 cases, and usually on the first page of the decision, the decision-making agency identifies all the parties that appear before it. Sometimes those parties are state agencies, or at least one of those parties is a state agency. Sometimes there are no state agencies. But I have never seen an agency, a decision-making agency, identify itself as a party under 227.47.1 in any case.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals came to the conclusion that there was ambiguity looking at all of these statutes. Now, I know you take the position in your brief that there is no ambiguity. And I guess I'm probing a little bit. These are very confusing statutes, aren't they?
What's happened over the years is that the legislature has added more and more specific provisions to Chapter 227, and they've added specific provisions to deal with specific situations, such as in this case, dealer licensing cases. And certainly, as you do that, Chapter 227 becomes more and more cumbersome. But I don't agree that there is confusion such that the decision-making agency in this case, under the statutory language that was used, could be DOT.
But do you think the ambiguity issue is your strongest issue here, or do you think the reasonableness issue is your strongest issue?
I think that the ambiguity issue is so strong that you never have to get to the reasonableness issue. But I don't know how, on the reasonableness issue, if you get a notice saying in your petition for judicial review, you should name the Division of Hearings and Appeals as a respondent, how you can justify not doing that and then not even provide any evidence in circuit court, at least no factual evidence, explaining why you didn't do that.
Well, the statute that requires that, as I understand it, results from a decision of this court, the Sunnyview case. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that statute has been in existence now 20-some years?
Yes. And, I mean, you know, the court said in Sunnyview, look, you have to tell the petitioning party who the respondent is. And then the legislature picked up on that, and the legislature said, yes, the court was right in Sunnyview. You have to tell the decision-making agent or the parties that appear before the agency who the respondent is on the petition for judicial review. We did everything. The Division of Hearings and Appeals did everything that the court required of it in Sunnyview, that the legislature required of it in 227.48.2.
Court of Appeals says, though, ha ha, you may have done everything, but the way that you did it is confusing. They say, take a look at your notice. And they say this in their paragraphs again on 11-12. Take a look at your notice. And sure enough, it says, as you say in sub 2 of the notice, any petition for judicial review shall name the Division of Hearings and Appeals as a respondent. So what's difficult about that, right? I mean, that's. But the Court of Appeals says that's followed by this sentence: persons desiring to file for judicial review are advised to closely examine all provisions of 227.53 to ensure strict compliance. I'm skipping 52 in my reading. So when the Court of Appeals looks at 227.53.1, they say, and looking at that together with the definition of agency in 227, someone could reasonably conclude that DHA is not an agency and thus cannot be the entity which must be served. Of course, 227.53.1 says what you have to do in the way proceeding for judicial review is serve a petition upon the agency or one of its officials. And it goes on to say, if the agency whose decision is sought to be reviewed is the Tax Appeals Commission, the Bank Review Board, the Credit Union Review Board, or the Saving Institution Review Board, the petition shall be served upon both the agency whose decision is sought to be reviewed and the correspondingly named respondent. Well, does that mean when the Credit Union Review Board is reviewing the decision of, I don't know who they review, they both have to be named or just one has to be named? And how does that apply here when you have DHA, which according to the Court of Appeals may or may not be an agency under the statute? Who do you serve then? That's what the Court of Appeals is saying. I'm putting a little extra in there. How do you respond to that conclusion set forth in paragraph 11, that a reasonable reading of 227.53.1 in conjunction with 227 could reasonably conclude that DHA is not an agency and thus cannot be the entity which must be served under 227.53.1? How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I mean, if the Court of Appeals is saying 227.53.1 is confusing, maybe it is, but you still have to look at what actually happened in the case. There's nothing in 227.53.1 that would indicate that the Department of Transportation is the decision-making agency in this case. They're the three agencies that you mentioned, the commissioner, the Tax Appeals Commission, the Commissioner of Financial Institutions. There's no mention of DOT in that statute. Second of all 227.48.2 requires you to do is to identify the agency that should be named as the respondent in the Chapter 227 petition for judicial review. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with referring counsel to the section of Chapter 227 that explains how you file a petition for judicial review. They didn't have to do that, but I don't agree that that makes the notice confusing as to who should be served as respondent.
Well, I'm looking at, because they say that 227.53.1 is confusing when you look at the definitions of agency in 227.01. When I looked at your brief, I saw how many primary statutes were involved here. I think I lost count, but it was a page and a half that we have to go through in this case. But 227.01, that's pretty simple. Sub 1, agency. Agency means the Wisconsin Land Council. That's not here. Or a board. That's not here. Commission. Doesn't seem to fit. Committee. Nope. Department or officer in the state government. Well, I think one could argue that the Division of Hearing Appeals is not a department. You can argue that it's affiliated with a department, but, you can argue that it's not a department. Except the governor, a district attorney, or military or judicial officer. So, how many different statutes do you have to go to after this definition, which does not include something like the Division of Hearing and Appeals, how many statutes do you have to kind of intertwine to get this to be an agency? Lead me through that, if you will.
Before I do that, let me just say I think that under the specific provisions of 227.46.2M, that takes care of it. But if you have to go through and use the definition of agency in 227.01, as I indicated, in 227.43.1, that refers to the administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals in the Department of Administration. That's also language in 218.01169, I believe it is.
The department there is the Department of Administration.
Right.
The very
So
words.
You have the Division of Hearings and Appeals. If you have to use that definition at all, you have two statutes saying that in these kinds of cases, it's the Division of Hearings and Appeals in the Department of Administration.
Would you just be of assistance and give me those statutes again so that I can look at them?
227.43(1).
Okay.
218.0116(9).
Okay. And both of those, as I understand it, have the language, the Division of Hearing and Appeals, a division in within the Department of Administration or something
yes.
like that. And so that, then, those two you are relying on to supplement the 227.01 definition of agency?
I'm using those to harmonize 227.46(2)(m), which is a later enacted and more specific provision, if such harmonization is necessary. In our view, the later enacted, more specific provisions of 227.46(2)(m) are controlling over the more general and earlier provision in 227.01.
Counsel, let me ask you about that, because I've been trying to figure out what this means as well. The next-to-last sentence in 227.46(2)(m), the decision of the administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals is a final decision of the agency subject to judicial review. Which agency? Because a division is not an agency as agency is defined.
Again, as Division of Hearings and Appeals is defined in Chapter 218, it's defined as Division of Hearings and Appeals in the Department of Administration. And I don't know, you know, they're making a lot of this, those three words of the agency in the statute, but if you put yourself in the position of a drafter, how else would you say it? Would you say the decision of the administrator of the Divisions of Hearings and Appeals is a final decision of the Division of the Administrator of the Divisions of Hearings and Appeals? And it doesn't become any more clear if you take out of the agency. I mean,
the question, I guess the tone of my question is, who gets served given this language? If we're talking about agency, and I know one of your backup arguments is the agency is Department of Administration, which seems to be consistent with 43(1). But if you're talking about serving an agency, and a division is not an agency by definition, then the question becomes, do you serve... Which department fulfills the definition of agency? And I think that's what the Court of Appeals was getting at. Are we talking about Department of Transportation? Are we talking about Department of Administration? Is it really that clear? I think that was the gist of the Court of Appeals' decision. Am I reading that wrong?
I think you summarized it well. I don't agree with the characterization, their characterization, not your summary. But there's just no way you can read 227.46(2)(m) to apply to the Department of Administration. I don't know how else you would draft it.
Department of Administration?
To apply to the Department of Transportation, excuse me. I don't know how else you would draft that language. And in fact, you know, I believe this language was picked up from the old Transportation Commission language. Well, there is an argument under Sunnyview that they could name the Department of Administration because this division is attached to DOA in the same way that that division was attached to DOA. Now, the difference between the two cases, we gave a notice in this case saying, you know, this is who you name.
Okay. Let me see if I understand your argument. DOT is a party, and it needed to be served, and it was appropriately served.
That's correct.
The error here was that the respondent should have been DHA or DOA, not DOT.
Correct.
So then if the respondent was DHA or DOA, they should have been served.
Yeah, named, yes.
Named and served. They weren't named. Were they served?
No.
And weren't served. Okay. In Sunnyview, the Department of Administration was named and apparently was served.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I get it.
Thank
for
you.
For the moment. We'll now hear from Attorney Richard J. Ward, representing All Star Rent-A-Car, Inc. Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Just as Abram Hudson just said, I am Attorney Richard J. Ward, and I represent All Star Rent-A-Car in this case. All Star Rent-A-Car was the petitioner for judicial review in the Circuit Court and is a respondent here. As you know from the briefs, All Star is a motor vehicle dealer. And for the past 3.5 years, the Department of Transportation has been trying to revoke All Star's dealer's license and put him out of business.
Are they still in business?
Yes, to a limited degree.
What do you mean? But nothing to do with DOT? Or yes?
Yes.
Why limited?
Excuse me?
Why limited degree? Is there a stay of the DOT order here?
Yes, the DOT order has been stayed, but due to the fact that there's been financial repercussions as a result of the 3.5 years of revocation proceedings, he had to cut
it. It had nothing to do with the legal proceedings.
No.
Per se.
No,
okay,
nothing
thank
to do
you.
With the legal proceedings per se. I was going to say that as part of the licensing process at DOT, the Department of Transportation also denied the renewal of his license when it came up for renewal. And as part of this ongoing effort, when All Star sought judicial review of the DHA decision, the DOT filed motions to block judicial review on procedural grounds. I'm here to ask this court to affirm the Court of Appeals, remand the case back to Circuit Court with directions to proceed with judicial review. For ease of reference here, I'm going to refer to the DOT and the DHA in their joint role in this case as petitioners in this proceeding and as respondents in Circuit Court as the Attorney General, since the office has represented both parties throughout this proceeding and as the DOT or the DHA in their individual capacity when appropriate. The Attorney General's entire argument is based on an eight-word phrase in Section 227.53, paren 1, paren B, of Wisconsin's Administrative Procedure Act, which deals with the contents of a petition for judicial review, specifically who should be named as respondent.
Now, and that was attached to the decision that you got, is that correct? In other words, the notice was there for someone who was going to review this decision to read.
No.
It was not?
No, I'm talking about a different section of the statutes.
Okay. Which section are you talking about?
I'm talking about 227.53.
Okay.
Which is the eight-word phrase that says, agency whose decision is sought to be reviewed. Now, the Attorney General is arguing that there's only one agency that the DHA is the only agency that that phrase fits.
Well, I think that was one of the points of raising a question as to whether DOT had anything reviewable. If it just issued a statement, letter, whatever, saying you are going to be revoked, without any explanation, without any hearing that's transcribed in some form, then what can be reviewed in DOT? The whole point about this was that DHA had a fact-finding hearing, right?
Yes.
Issued a decision with findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Yes.
That we can review, then the Circuit Court can review. If it's just the DOT blank statement saying you are revoked, there's nothing to review.
Yes, that goes back to my first argument, however, which I believe Justice Butler addressed, and that is what do those words of the agency mean in Section 227.46, paren 2M and paren. And it's our position that of the agency means that that final decision of the administrator of the Division of Hearings and Appeals is a decision of the Department of Transportation. And I think as Attorney Cruan pointed out, that tracks from an earlier statute where that decision, where that language applied to a decision of the Commissioner of Insurance.
But I thought that one of the themes here, and I can be wrong, of putting the hearing examiner in the DOA was to remove the hearing examiner from the department and the department's control and put it into a neutral agency that did not control the substance. I mean, that was the part of giving impartiality. Am I not right?
I would expect so, but I don't know that that's the case, but the
sense, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. In fact, I've always thought that that was kind of a peculiar situation where you had employees, for instance, of the Department of Health and Family Services ruling on actions that other employees had taken. But in response, the Division of Hearings and Appeals assigns hearing examiners to all kinds of licensing cases. And the decisions that come out are still decisions of those agencies, although the decisions are written by hearing examiners. And that gets to my next point, is that under Section 227.46, the other subsections of that statute, the decisions of hearing examiners through either sub 2 or sub 3 or sub 4 become the decisions of the agency, and in fact the very same phrase is used depending upon which alternative the agency chooses to decide what the hearing examiner is going to, how that's going to become the decision of the agency. It's a little different process with DOT decisions because, well, there's two different kinds of DOT decisions. There's the licensing decision, which is under the hearing examiners are assigned under 227.43(1)(bg), and that in turn then the decisions come out under 227.46(2)(m). Those are the dealer licensing decisions. There are also contested cases that the DOT decides. Hearing examiners are appointed under 227.43(1)(br), and although the hearing examiner can issue a decision, it becomes a decision of the DOT, and the DOT then, it becomes a decision of the agency under, I think it's 227.46(8), and that contains the precise exact same language of 227.46(2)(2)(m) that the Department of Transportation can appeal a decision. So it's my argument that all of those provisions of Section 227.46 track with one another, and the phrase agency or of the agency or however that's used, and I think I counted it up, agency is used some 20 times in Section 227.46. They all refer to the line agency rather than the Division of Hearings and Appeals. And according to the maxim in pari materia, or however that goes in Latin, this court should construe agency the same as it would throughout that statute, and that is agency should be the line agency.
Mr. Ward, I understand you're taking the position that when you look at all of these statutes, that you've got an ambiguous situation. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Let me go to the issue of reasonableness. It's my understanding that there's no contest about the fact that you received from DHA a notice that DHA was to be named as a respondent for purposes of judicial review. Now, looking at that, isn't it reasonable then to assume that what should have been done was that DHA should have been named as a respondent and therefore served?
Well, we get several comments I can make there. First of all, I'd like to say initially that I certainly wish that I read that notice more carefully and then served and filed both the DOT and the DHA. After that being said, I should say that if one looks at that notice, the first thing, as a trial lawyer, a lawyer that's been doing trial work for 30 years, when you have a procedural issue, the first thing you look at is the statutes. And that's what I did in this case. You refer to Section 227.53, which deals specifically with judicial review, and that says serve the agency. Well, the agency that initiated this whole process, the licensing process, and if you look at the definition of agency, it talks about licensing processes. That's the Department of Transportation that initiated the licensing process 3 years ago in 2002. So that's the first place you look.
When you said that you wish that you had read it closer,
yes,
you're talking about you got a decision, didn't you? You got a decision.
Yes.
And then on the decision, and this is what I was going to say before, it said that any person aggrieved by this decision, the attached decision, is entitled to judicial review by filing a petition in accordance with the provisions of 227.52 and 227.53. I'm talking about, again, reading from 227.48.2. The next sentence says, any petition for judicial review shall name the Division of Hearings and Appeal as a respondent. Now, that's what you said you should have read closer?
If you're talking about this notice,
I'm talking about I believe I'm talking about this notice, correct?
Attaches page 17.
I'm talking about the notice, and it says any petition shall name the Division of Hearing and Appeals as respondent.
Yes.
So you could have named, as you said, DOT, but it said you shall name DHA.
Correct.
And you're arguing because of the, and I think the question of Justice Crook says, well, was it reasonable to exclude DHA when it said on the notice that you should name them?
Well, as I was trying to explain, the first thing that the notice does is it refers to Section 227.48. And if you go to 227.48, paren 2, it's a short paragraph, and it's not confusing at all. It says that you've got to file your notice within 30 days, and it's got a name as a respondent, the party, one of the parties. In this case, there were only two parties, those being All-Star, which lost, and the Department of Transportation, which won. So who's the party that you name as the respondent? It's the Department of Transportation. If you look at the notice, you get to 227.48, and as I said, you look then to the statutes, and you don't go any further. Further on, the next thing you look at in the notice is it says you got to look to 227.52 and 227.53. There again, it's talking about an agency, and as I said, you look at the definition of agency, you're talking about licensing agencies. You're not talking about a division that's primary purpose is to assign hearing examiners to contested cases. That's why it's reasonable to name and serve the Department of Transportation.
In this case, the Department of Transportation and DHA have the same interests, right?
Well, in my view, they do, yes.
DHA upheld the department, right?
Yes.
Substantively,
yes.
On the merits. And so on the merits, they have the same interest, that is, to affirm DHA and thereby affirm DOT.
Yes.
Right. We're here on a procedural ground, right?
Yes.
And for that purpose, too, these two entities have the same interest, namely stop the proceedings and we win, right?
Yes.
But you could have a proceeding where DOT says revoke the license. DHA says no, you erred, Department of Transportation, right?
Yes.
Who represents the, and I'm going to ask Mr. Cameron this too, who represents these two departments then? That is, who represents the Department of Transportation when they get up on the circuit court, and who represents the DHA?
There's never been, as far as I know, a dealer's licensing case that's gotten to the circuit court. In other cases that I've seen where the agency disagrees with what the hearing examiner has come down, it's usually the AG represents the hearing examiner, I believe, and in-house counsel for the agency represents the agency. I think that's the way it usually plays
so
out.
Both of these entities have to be given notice so that they both can make an appearance.
I believe if the agency is the petitioner in that case, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
At that point, I can make another point I was going to make later on in my presentation.
Okay, do it now.
Is that under the Sunnyview Village case, this court suggested that Section 227.53 does not have to be read, that there has to be only one agency that is named as the respondent. And I think this is a perfect example of a case where there perhaps is two different agencies or at least governmental entities that might be named as a respondent, depending upon who prevails at the hearing stage.
It's just you don't agree with the state as to which are the two. The state says the two are DHA and DOA, and you didn't serve either one of them. You want to say that the two are DOT and DHA and maybe DOA, so the three. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess I don't, you know, DOA really doesn't have anything to do with these licensing cases, so that, you know, kind of doesn't make any sense to me at all. But, yes, if the Department of Transportation wins, then they're an adverse party. I mean, in most cases, civil cases, appeals from municipal court, small claims court, family court commissioners, decisions, it's the adverse party that's named as the defendant or the respondent. It's not the adjudicating tribunal.
Counsel, you got a lot of administrative agencies or entities. I don't want to get it mixed up into the definitions. You got a lot of cases being heard by hearing examiners. And people are suffering serious consequences. Or the public is suffering serious consequences as a result of agency decisions, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how does the court rule on a procedural case like this so that, as we said in Sunnyview, you don't trap people in the state of Wisconsin? Not all of them have lawyers. And lawyers don't always practice in administrative agency or judicial review, and these statutes are complex. All right? So what kind of ruling does this court make that is not a trap, but at the same time does not say anything goes? Because we do have a law. And we do have statutes, and there's a short period of 30 days, and you want to get everybody in, right, to the circuit court. So what kind of rule do we set forth? Maybe that's the same thing as saying what's reasonable in this case. I'm just saying, using different words, maybe.
The rule I would propose was addressed or at least suggested in the Peterson versus DOT case and the McDonough versus, I guess it was Diller or Lurk. I don't remember which one was actually named as the defendant or respondent in that case. And that's
the Peterson case.
Pardon me?
Are you talking about the Peterson case?
Okay. No, I'm talking about the McDonald case that was handed down about the same time.
Right.
And the Peterson case, both of those cases. And the rule that was suggested in those cases, or at least that I would suggest based on those cases, that is, unless the statute specifically says who to name and serve, these procedural issues that the Attorney General has raised over the last 50 years to try to cut off judicial review just aren't going to be heard by this court. And the legislature clearly knows how to do that. One of the justices was reading from section 227.53, where it specifically states under certain circumstances which agency or governmental entity is to be named and served. It would be my position, and I think the best rule is that unless a statute does that and says that in cases of Department of Transportation licensing, the Division of Hearings and Appeals shall be named as respondent, there shouldn't be any, or the Attorney General shouldn't be able to come in and try to block judicial review by raising a procedural issue, claiming that the wrong party has been named and served.
What's the matter with saying that in accordance with the statute, the deciding entity, here DHA, at least the last deciding entity, says who you name and who you serve, and that you can follow that lawyer or citizen, and you're not going to get knocked out of court?
Well, that assumes they're correct, first of all, and that's in conflict with the DHA's own rule.
Well, I'm not assuming they're correct. I'm just saying they told the citizen how to do it, and the citizen can just rely on them. And if the AG or the department comes in and says, we're dead wrong, ha-ha, the court says, ha-ha, and you told them. Now, if there's a party missing here, somebody didn't give the notice, give it now.
Well, I guess...
It doesn't help your case. I understand that.
Attorneys, at least in the private bar, are ever mindful of that old maxim, there's no estoppel against the government. And
there are exceptions to the...
I know there are exceptions, but, you know, I'm just saying that something, and I believe in some of the cases I read in preparing for this, that, you know, in some of the cases where the Attorney General has brought out a motion to dismiss on technical procedural grounds, that maxim has come up and been upheld. I believe the Weisenthal case was one where that maxim was cited and the appeal was, or the judicial review was blocked because there was no estoppel against the government employee.
Counsel, as I read Judge Krieger's circuit court opinion, it indicates essentially because there was no service, that the case was not going forward. She states at the concluding paragraph, however, instead of serving the agency that did the deciding, they served, there was insufficient service to confer jurisdiction. That's what her holding was in the last paragraph of her case. The Court of Appeals characterizes the holding of the circuit court the same way as I read it. And that is, the circuit court dismissed All-Star's petition because All-Star had not served DHA. The Court of Appeals then comes up with its holding. We conclude that the statutes which prescribe the administrative entity All-Star was required to serve in order to comply, and so serve. Where in this notice that was referred to by Justice Wilcox does it set forth who is to be served?
It's, you know, under paragraph 2 again in the middle of, I guess it's the third paragraph, although it's numbered paragraph 2. It says, if a rehearing is requested, as noted in paragraph 1 above, any party seeking judicial review shall serve and file a petition for judicial review within 30 days. It says you got to serve and file it then.
Does this notice say who you're supposed to serve?
No. I hadn't thought of that particular argument.
If you had named it as respondent, you would have served them.
Yes.
So the problem is, if you don't name them as respondent, you don't serve them, generally. I mean, you could have served them, and you might have then gotten over that hurdle and say, hey, just because they weren't in the caption, that's technical. I got them in 30 days, and it's okay. But here, they're not in the caption,
right,
and you didn't serve them,
I perhaps could have named them and served them.
Right, and then that would
not serve them because it's really the Department of Transportation that's the party in interest, to borrow phrase from civil procedure.
That's right, and the statute specifically says they can petition for review. Right?
The Department of Transportation, correct.
So that's, we got a service and a notice issue. We got a service and a caption issue. Naming.
Do you agree with my reading of the Circuit Court's opinion that it was based just on service, or I didn't look at it real carefully, to be honest. I did about a week ago, and I just picked it up again now.
I haven't read that decision in, two years now.
Okay,
so.
Okay.
I don't know if it was based on service or the failure to name the appropriate governmental entity. I mean, I won't use the word agency, entity.
Counsel, let me ask a hypothetical that kind of follows up on the previous two questions. What if in this case, paragraph numbered 2 in the notice had read, any petition for judicial review shall name the Department of Administration as the respondent? Would you disagree that that would be or agree that that would be appropriate notice, given that DHA is a subdivision of Department of Administration?
Well, I would still maintain that under the language of sub 2M of section 227.46, that phrase of the agency, particularly followed by the last sentence, which says the Department of Transportation can bring an action for judicial review, I believe, in light of the other use of that phrase of the agency throughout section 227.46, that's a reference back to the Department of Transportation.
Now, assume for purposes of this question that we disagree with you.
Okay.
All right. It would still be your position that DOA is not mentioned in the notice, that Division of Hearing and Appeals is not an agency by definition, and therefore where you were directed to serve is an inappropriate place to serve. Is that correct?
Well, the primary problem with the DHA is it's not a party, and section 227.48 requires the notice identify the party to be named as a respondent. And in fact, the DHA's own rules, I think it's HA 1.18, states that their notice that's to be appended to the back of a decision identify the party to be named as respondent. So the notice that they attach to the DOT licensing decisions doesn't comply with their own rules.
So your position is because it's directing you to the wrong entity, therefore the notice is ambiguous, and you would support the Court of Appeals opinion.
I think the notice is just in error. It's directed to the hearing tribunal, the Division of Hearings and Appeals, not a party, which, as I said, the statute and the Division of Hearings and Appeals' own rules say should be a party. So, you know, it's just wrong. to go on, I see I've got the yellow light here. I also have raised a waiver argument, which follows from the MCRUT decision, and that's the that the Department of Transportation waived any objection. In this case, I understand that in MCRUT, the this court set kind of a lower level, and they said there can be no waiver just because the agency did not raise the objection in a notice of appearance, and they overruled the Wall v. DOR case. Well, this is a different situation where the DOT appeared by the Attorney General at two different hearings on All-Star's motion for a stay. They called witnesses, they filed a brief, and they didn't raise the objection that the circuit court lacked subject matter jurisdiction or competency to proceed. They waited until the 30 days had ran, lead in the weeds, if you would, and then on that 30th day, came or 31st day, came in and filed their motion to dismiss on procedural grounds. I think this is a situation where the court should find waiver.
Who has the, how can the DOT waive the DHA's right to be named and served?
Well, it was the DOT that brought the motion to dismiss, and the DHA was subsequently named and served.
Got it. Thank you, counsel. The red light is on. Mr. Creeran. Best rule for the state and for the public.
I think the best rule is the one which you implicitly suggested in your question, which is your question to Attorney Ward, which is if you follow the instructions in the notice as to who should be named as respondent, you're okay.
The notice can't change the statutes, right? So if we interpret the statutes as requiring something different than it's in the notice doesn't have the ability to change the statute.
I agree. For instance, if we had put a notice that said name the personnel commission in this case, they would have been okay if they had named DHA. So I agree in that sense that it doesn't supersede the statute, yes.
Thank you.
Could you explain what is the policy reason why it's important for the state to win here?
I think it's important. You know, you go back to you have statutes and legislatively prescribed procedures, and I think it's important that litigants follow statutes that the legislature enacts. And we have a duty to our client, if somebody doesn't follow those statutes, to bring that to the attention of the courts involved.
Was any agency prejudiced by the failure to follow the statute?
I don't believe that any agency was prejudiced, but I believe it's, if it's a question of competency to proceed, that prejudice is not an issue that the court considers.
And how would you address the waiver argument that Mr. Ward made at the end?
Let me just clarify one thing about Mr. Ward's argument. We have 20 days under Chapter 227 to file a notice of appearance or a motion to dismiss, not 30, and we did do that within the 20 days. He brought two motions to stay the agency's decision. He brought one that I believe was heard 2 days after DOT was served, and he obtained an ex parte order to have a hearing in front of Judge Krieger, and he renewed that motion again before our notice of appearance was due, in other words, inside the 20-day period. If he chooses to bring a motion inside the 20-day period, we don't waive anything by appearing. Second of all, as Chief Justice Abrahamson pointed out, DHA had never been served at all and couldn't have waived anything by our appearance on behalf of DOT at those stay hearings or temporary restraining order hearings.
Suppose DOT said the license was revoked. DHA reviews and says license not revoked. DOT is going to now seek judicial review, right? Who does it name as respondent?
DOT would name DHA as respondent.
Right. If it named DOT as the respondent and never served DHA, then DHA has no one representing it, its decision.
That's correct.
So it would have to name DHA as a party or as a respondent and serve it within the time period. So although it's DHA may not be harmed here because DOT and DHA are on the same page, represented by same counsel, substantively and procedurally. There are times when they do not have the same substantive or maybe even procedural interests.
That's absolutely correct.
So they can be harmed.
Yes.
If they're not named. It's just in this case they are not.
Correct.
Counsel, you could tell perhaps by my earlier questions that I was trying to make a division between named and served. I don't know if that's appropriate, but that's where I was going because I was looking at the circuit court decision, and it was for lack of jurisdiction because there wasn't service.
Right. I want to make absolutely clear that we raised both issues in circuit court. Judge Krieger may have only referred to service, but absolutely both issues were raised and continue to be presented in this court.
Would you have as good a case if they weren't named as respondent but served within 30 days?
It's never as good a case if they don't do two things than it is if they don't do one thing.
But your motion to dismiss, which I do not have in front of me, was on both bases.
Absolutely. Let me just conclude by saying I thought Judge Krieger did an excellent job of harmonizing DOT versus Peterson, this court's Sunnyview decision, and I commend those decisions to the court.
Thank you, Mr. Creon. Thank you, Mr. Ward, for your arguments today on an issue that hasn't come up, at least in this court, very recently, except through the Peterson case. So the court will wrestle with the statutes. Thank you. That ends the hearing on 03AP 2668 All Star Rent a Car versus DOT. Court's in recess until 1:30 to hear its third case. The students may remain here, and Justice Robinsack will be out shortly.